Welcome to Sports Rivals with Monty and Ernie. Lively, entertaining banter on sports topics you want to hear.
All right, everyone, wherever you are and however you may be listening, this is another edition of the Sports Rivals. That's Ernie, I am Monty, and we are ready to get after it. Again, similarly, not a lot going on, but there's a lot of basketball talk to talk about. Some NFL news, some, I think the biggest news is probably all the running backs that are not going to be franchised and all of them are going to be available. We'll get more to that in a little bit. My closing thought later on will be the early returns on Shohei and Yamamoto for the Dodgers. But as we normally do, let's start off with local sports, particularly the University of Hawaii. The men's basketball team go on the road. They get handled on senior night on Thursday by Davis, but they respond and beat Riverside yesterday. They had a 10-point lead, gave that back, went to overtime, and Noel Coleman with 31 points, five three-pointers, led them to victory. We talked about this last week. If they can go on the road and get that split, come home, take care of Northridge, and take care of Bakersfield to end the season, that will give them at least the number four seed with the possibility of even getting maybe up to three. So I think they're in a pretty good spot. I mean, the Northridge game on Wednesday is going to be really the key because that'll create two games of separation between the two. And again, this week it's Wednesday and Saturday. So Hawaii sitting at 17 and 13 overall, 9-9 in the conference with two games left. Gotta like their spot right
now. They got a puncher's chance. Better than getting that seeding, I think it's momentum that's carrying them into this tournament, you know. And anything can happen. There really is no outstanding team per se, you know, in the Mountain West. So any team can be beat at any particular time. And, you know, as long as they're playing well and they're on a neutral court, you know, I give them a puncher's chance against anybody.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree. I think they don't match up well with Irvine because of their size, but eventually you're going to probably have to go through Irvine to win this thing. But if they're hot, if they're playing well, if they're moving the basketball, I think they do. They have a good as chance as anyone to win. They've proven that by beating Long Beach. They've beaten Davis. They've beaten San Diego. Teams 2, 3, and 4 in terms of record. They can beat anyone.
They can lose.
And they can lose to anyone. I think we learned that early on. They seem to be playing a little bit better. Again, I'm still interested to see how Javon McClanahan gets brought back into this. He had 25 minutes in yesterday's game. Mm-hmm. Played great defense down the stretch. So I think that's where he is significantly better than Juan Munoz. I still think the team operated better offensively without McClanahan. But Noel Coleman stepped up. Justin McCoy, since McClanahan's played a little bit more, has pulled back again a little bit. So we'll have to see how this plays out. Again, you want all your horses to be able to get in there and take it through, give Gannat options. So we'll see. That Northridge game is key. If they win that game, they're in really, really good shape.
Yeah. I mean, the last game is, to me, academic. Should be academic if you can call that anything in this conference. But yeah, that Northridge game should be the springboard that takes them into, you know, the tournament.
Yeah, the Big West tournament. Yeah, because if they win out, they're 19-13. They're 11-9 in conference. That's not a bad season, considering where they were about a month ago. No. I mean, that would be really turning things around. So let's hope for the best with them. One thing we don't have to worry about, the Wahine completed a undefeated home conference season. They're now 18-9, 15-3 in the conference. They just have to win one of their last two games on the road against the two lowest teams in the conference to secure the number one seed in the tournament. But another pretty good crowd of over 3,000 people last night for senior night. Laura Beeman continues to get it done at the University of Hawaii. Congratulations to the Wahine.
Yeah, congratulations to them. Another outstanding season. hopefully this can be the season where, you know, they can get over the hump.
All right, so let's transition now. We'll get back to the NCAA in a little bit, but I want to jump into the NBA because there is a lot to talk about in regards to Ernie's team, the Boston Celtics. They came off a 52-point drubbing of Golden State today, but it's not just the Golden State game. Over their last 10 games out of their 11-game winning streak, they have beaten teams by an average of over 20 points a game with two 50-point blowouts. This is the most prolific stretch over a 10-game winning streak of margin of victory in NBA history. So we talked about it last week that the Celtics are playing better. You alluded to the fact that they're not playing their A game. They certainly look to be putting it all together now.
Yeah.
Let's see if this will continue all the way through the playoffs. But they have, to me, further separated themselves from everyone else in the East. And honestly, after watching the Nuggets against my Lakers last night, where the Lakers gave them everything they could handle, but if Michael Porter is going to go 10 for 10 and 5 for 5 from 3, they're going to be tough to beat. Those two teams, to me, are separating themselves from everyone else, in my opinion. But let's talk about your Celtics first, because they are rolling.
Oh, yeah. I mean, irregardless of the 50-point win, they included with that is a 40-point win over Memphis. I mean, their last loss was to your Lakers. And to me, the Achilles heel of this Boston Celtics team is in their head. I mean, they lost to a Laker team without LeBron, without AD. And their closest win in this 11-game winning streak was to the Washington Wizards. So, you know, it gets into their head. They pull off a little bit. But you know what? I don't think that exists in the playoffs. They have the best home record. They're probably going to solidify home field advantage throughout the playoffs. That includes the finals. I believe they got a 6-point lead against anybody in the West, a 9-game lead with anybody in the East. They've only lost back-to-back games just once this entire year. And you talk about their losses. Three of their losses came in overtime. Two of their losses were by 2 points. I mean, those you go 50-50 on those two. I mean, this could be let's just say this. They blew out the Warriors today. They didn't have Kristaps Porzingis. I mean, and he's been the key, in my opinion, for this year's success. I mean, he stretches that defense. He pulls out the big guys, and they can just do what they will. On top of that, their defense is playing at an all-time level, which showed today against the Warriors.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I think the Jrue Holiday effect has really taken shape, and that's where I feel a little bit more confident. You know, Marcus Smart was a former Defensive Player of the Year himself. He was a great player, but temperamentally, he was all over the place, and I think with Jrue Holiday, you're going to have even keel, always playing hard, always doing what is necessary to help the team win. And I think that bodes well for this team because he, with Derek White and then the big two and Porzingis, again, the only thing that can really deter the Celtics at this point in time to me would be injury. Again, anything can happen in a 7-game series. I think we've seen that with them getting knocked out over the last 2 years. But to me, by far, this is the best Celtic team.
That'd be close.
In a long, long time. Probably since the Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen teams in the mid-early 2000s. This team is on a roll. They seem to be a team of destiny. Now, whether they get through the Nuggets, I think that's going to be a tremendous matchup. Because they're not mirror images of themselves.
No,
you know,
no.
Jokic is going to be a problem. Murray's going to be a problem. Tatum and Brown are going to be problems. Neither team has tremendous depth. They have some solid pieces that can come on and do certain things. It's going to be one of those things. If Porter is going to continue to shoot the way he has been shooting and what he did yesterday, and Gordon plays well, then the Nuggets can hang with the Celtics. But I think you know what you're going to get from Porzingis for the most part if he can stay healthy. And I think they're going to manage him. They have such a big lead in the East and over the West. And he's not in danger of being any all-NBA first three teams. So I think for him, they're going to manage him down the stretch, and they're going to manage Tatum down the stretch because he has a lot of games that he can sit out and still win all NBA. And I think that's been one of the problems, is that Tatum has played tired down the stretch in some of these playoffs.
Yeah.
So if he can go in fresh and Porzingis is fresh, it looks pretty good, unfortunately, for your Celtics as a Laker fan.
It does. Like you said, I think the only thing that can beat... I like Boston over Denver more than I think you do. That first game, Boston led... I read something here. Denver led 3 minutes of the 48 minutes. Boston missed 4 free throws. In the last 5 minutes of the game, Jason Tatum took an ill-advised three-point shot to win the game at home when he should have drove for 2 to tie the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think Boston didn't lose that game to Denver. Boston lost that game to themselves. I think they beat themselves in that game.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, but I think there's no doubt that Denver's playing way better now than they were back then.
So is Boston.
Yeah. But that's what's going to make it intriguing. I mean, Boston to me is playing the best, and we'll get to our top five. Boston's definitely the best team in the NBA right now. But you got to knock off the champs. And the Joker is the best player in the world. And he continues to prove that when he's fully motivated. I thought the Lakers were going to get the Nuggets last night without Murray because he sprained his ankle the game before. But nope, he was back.
He looked absolutely
normal. I was like, oh, good. We're going to catch a break. No Murray. And again, like the Lakers did all last year in the playoffs. They played them tough until the very end of the game. And then Murray and Jokic take over.
In the fourth quarter.
And even the fourth quarter. It was the last 2 minutes. The Lakers had a 110-108 lead with 2 minutes left.
Right.
They barely scored the rest of the game.
Yeah. I think they were tied going into the fourth, which ruined another LeBron legacy moment.
Yeah, getting his 40,000th point. That's just remarkable when you think about it. But I think watching last night, for Laker fans that are irrational, I think it was a reminder that the Lakers just cannot beat the Nuggets. So no matter what happens, if they were to get to the Western Conference Finals or whenever that matchup would come about, they can't beat them. They can beat everyone else. I think they've proven that they can beat the OKC, they can beat Minnesota, they even beat the Clippers twice this year. They cannot beat the Nuggets.
Yeah.
The Nuggets are just not a good matchup for them.
0-4, right?
0-3 this year, but they've lost 8 in a row going back to last year.
Playoffs, yeah.
Including the sweep in the playoffs. And it's not that they blow them out. Denver's blown them out one time. But they find a way to win down the stretch. I think they're in the Lakers' head. So that's my thought. I think we're on a collision course here. Now, Milwaukee's playing a whole lot better right now. It's like after the All-Star break, they flipped the switch. They're playing better defense. They're holding teams under 100 points a game.
Only one team since the All-Star break has broken 100 against them.
Yeah, so that might make the Celtics a little nervous, but I still don't think there's enough there. I think Jrue Holiday will give Dame problems. Giannis will be Giannis, but there's not enough. That team does not have enough to compete with everything that the Celtics have. And I think Porzingis' length will give Giannis some trouble as well when he tries to penetrate, you know, through the middle. So they are playing much better. So are the Heat, who are playing much better. Cleveland is still playing better, although they're losing right now to the Knicks down. Oh, they just lost to the Knicks. Donovan Mitchell sat out today.
He sat out, but the Knicks are missing 3 starters.
Yeah, the Knicks are still, and I think it's getting late, you know. So like we talked about last week, I think the Knicks have the makeup and the style of play to grind it out and make it ugly.
But it might be too late.
I think it's going to be too late to incorporate all these new guys.
Yeah.
It's really, really difficult to incorporate this many different people and be a threat. So I think Boston is still sitting pretty. In the West, really, the Nuggets have risen to the top. The Mavericks had won 7 in a row, but they've lost a couple since. OKC, Minnesota, they're winning. They are winning.
They are.
Everybody's winning.
I mean, right now it's a 3-way tie, technically. I mean, today I think they're all, based upon games played, I think they are all in a virtual tie. But really, the only one of those teams that are actually in Vegas' top five to win the NBA championship is the Denver Nuggets. Like, I think OKC is even beyond New York. I think the Knicks have a better, according to Vegas, Knicks have a better odds of winning a championship than the OKC Thunder. And to me, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think Vegas is trying to, the Knicks have a more recognizable name, so I think they're trying to bait people to put money there. But OKC, Minnesota's lost two in a row. OKC has lost one. I think most people are not taking those teams seriously right. You know, at this point in time. So I think everybody is starting to be resolute that it's going to be the Nuggets. Maybe Phoenix can knock them off if they're healthy, but they haven't proven that all three guys can stay healthy all year. The Clippers have the potential to knock them off if Paul George and Kawhi are healthy. Like I said, I don't see my Lakers being able to get through here. Right now, we're at 10. So yeah. We're going to struggle to just get into the playoffs.
Yeah, here's how I think. I think Lakers will probably be matched up with any one of Minnesota and OKC. And I think they can take out Minnesota and OKC. But beyond that, it's going to be tough sledding.
Yeah, I would agree. But I don't even know if we could take out Golden State and Dallas or Sacramento at this point in time. I mean, we can.
I think they can.
But in a one-game series, it always makes me nervous. And we'd have to win in Golden State and then in Sacramento. Dallas.
That's true.
So that's going to make it complicated. But I have reasonable expectations. I just want them to continue to play well. But I just don't see it. I never really took them seriously that they were going to be a threat to the title. And I think last night was just another reminder. Not to mention the gauntlet of games that we have coming up this week. We've got OKC, Minnesota, Milwaukee, the Warriors twice, Kings twice. So by next week, Sunday,
they'll be in Monty's top five.
we may not even be in the top 10, actually. They're pretty safely in the top 10. They've got a five-game lead there. Now, speaking of top fives, last week I went first, so we're going to turn it over to Ernie for his top five.
I got, well, obviously we got the Boston Celtics. They're on that 11-game win streak. Denver is number two, for everything you mentioned. I mean, I think they have the second longest winning streak other than Boston. And that's going to be an interesting matchup because they play on Thursday at Denver. So we'll see who is the dominant force in that game. The Clippers, to me, are number three. And this is where I had a hard time with Milwaukee playing so well, beating both Minnesota and Denver. But then again, you cannot ignore that in between those two wins, they lost to the Memphis Grizzlies. So I'm going to put OKC there at number four, just because I like OKC and I feel their disrespect on the Vegas side that they're picked lower than the New York Knicks. And then I'm going to have Milwaukee at number five because, man, like you said, that defense, their offense was already like number two or number three points-wise. When you're allowing one game in five that goes over 100, that's tremendous defense. I don't care who you play. You know,
in today's NBA,
yeah,
that's for sure.
I mean, they say, oh, yeah, but they play Charlotte and they play. I don't care who you play. Like you said. Today's NBA, the average score is like 113, 100, something like that. So to do that in four out of five games is a tremendous feat. And I don't think they can keep it up. Or is that my mind thinking I don't want them to keep it up?
I think there's a little bit of both in there. Again, I think as great as Dame is, Jrue Holiday is super important and was important to Milwaukee's success. So my top five is not too dissimilar from yours. Clearly, I have Boston 1, Denver 2. I don't have the Clippers. I dropped them out of my top five. I go OKC, Minnesota, and the Bucks in my top five. So for the reasons that you already alluded to, actually, I have Minnesota slightly ahead of OKC. I believe OKC has the best player in SGA of this group, but I believe the balance of having a defensive player of the year type person in Gobert, as well as having Kat and Ant-Man, I think gives them they're better suited with a with Conley at the point for the playoffs, I think, with such a young team in OKC. I think OKC is universally more talented, but I think Minnesota is probably set up to have more success in the playoffs. But they're clearly, by record, they're tied right now. But so is Denver with them. But Denver's won six in a row. Denver is in a different league for themselves. And then the Bucks are playing well. So I put them at number five to try to balance my list with not all West teams. So two straight weeks are pretty much the same.
Yeah, I think
over the top five.
I really think there are only like five or six teams that, in my opinion, have a really legit shot of winning the title. After that, there's a big gap in between there. And just to add my two cents, I picked Phoenix. To me, Phoenix, if Beal comes back, it's a big if. And like you mentioned, if they can put it all together, I think that's another team. Mm-hmm. Last year's team without Beal, I think you saw in those games that they just, KD and Booker just ran out of gas. And I think by putting just that one extra player in there, they can probably make a deep run. It hasn't really worked out in this regular season because of all the injuries. But to me, after that, there's a precipitous drop off, from those top six. Two from the East, the rest are from the West. The West is just heads and shoulders above the East this year. I mean, mind you, Philadelphia has injuries with Embiid, who probably would give Jokic a real run for his money on the MVP side. The Knicks are missing three starters. The Pacers made a good run, but I think the league has probably figured them out.
And ever since Halliburton opened his mouth about that pay thing, he's fallen off a cliff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's still getting his assist, but he's shooting atrociously, 0-for-6 again today from three. His scoring average is down to 21 now, and it was up at 26, 27 a couple of months ago. And they go where he takes them.
That's true.
And he's dropped off, and so have they. You know who hasn't dropped off or any? I was just looking at his stats now. Victor Wembanyama has been on a roll recently. I'm not sure you're paying attention to him because they suck. Well, but they're giving him a little bit more minutes. So he's up to about 30 minutes a game. Today, again, 31 points, 12 rebounds. His averages now are up to 21 points almost, 10 rebounds, 3.4 assists, 3.3 blocks a game. He's got a 0.6 block lead over the second place guy, shooting 47%. Statistically, this is better than LeBron's first year in the NBA. He is having a remarkable year. Future really seems bright for Victor Wembanyama if he can stay healthy.
I think future is bright now. Give him a point guard, please. If you give this guy a point guard, this guy is going to shoot up that ladder. I mean, I have no doubt about it. You up his minutes, you give him a legit point guard that can facilitate, create space for him, because which will allow him to stop shooting from the outside. I think his game right now is obviously being 7'4", 7'5" is more on the interior than the exterior. But right now he's just taking too many 3-point shots. Give him a point guard, please. That guy is going to be scary.
Yep, he will. And he's still tiny in terms of being razor thin, but he is taking the next step. Okay, so let's transition again. That's Ernie. I am Monty. We are the Sports Rivals to NCAA basketball. We are coming to the end of the regular season. All year long, I've talked about how bad Michigan and Michigan has been, and they are. They just completed I don't think it's completed yet, but they are now 3-17 in conference in the Big Ten and 8-22 on the season in one of the worst seasons, if not the worst season in Michigan basketball history. So that is quite a disappointment from where we were just a couple of years ago when they were on their way to the Final Four. But Gonzaga has really turned it around. They've now won 8 in a row in must-win situations because Most people had them on the bubble. Most people had them outside. They go to San Francisco, a quad one win, blew out San Francisco on Thursday. Come back last night in Moronga against St. Mary's, blows out St. Mary's, who had been 15-0 in conference on a 16-game winning streak in St. Mary's. Gonzaga now safely in the dance, I believe. Now it's just a matter of seeding, and we'll see who wins the rubber match between St. Mary's and Gonzaga in Vegas in the final of the West Coast Conference. But that's just my personal teams. Your North Carolina has reeled off three wins in a row. Looks like it's going to come down to next week, Saturday, in Duke. North Carolina can beat Duke in Duke. They will be the number one seed by themselves. If they lose to Duke next week, assuming Duke wins their other game, they will tie for the regular season crown. Either way, it kind of looks like the rest of the... There's a big gap between North Carolina and Duke and everyone else in the ACC. So it seems like we're on a collision course for another North Carolina-Duke ACC championship game in the tourney. It's what it seems like. So, but North Carolina is still playing well, still in the top eight, still with a chance at an outside chance at a one seed, a probable chance at a two seed. But for me, again, there's a clear separation between the top three teams. Houston is one now, Purdue is two, Connecticut is three, and everyone else. I mean, Tennessee is on a heater right now, so they're probably the next best team. Mm-hmm. Although Arizona has better rankings, but the Pac-12 is kind of weak. But they had an interesting talk yesterday on Basketball Talk, and Clark Kellogg said, "If I give you Houston, Connecticut, and Purdue, or I take Houston, Connecticut, and Purdue, and I give you the rest of the nation, who would you take?"
I would take Houston, Connecticut,
and Purdue. That's what both of them said. They seem to be where one of those three is going to win this. And I would have to agree. And for me, it's still Connecticut. You know, watching them play, they won by 30 again today.
Dan Hurley is for real. Yeah. He lost all those players last year. No care. He didn't even have the top recruiting class. No worries.
Yep. You know, Klingman is there. Newton has developed into an All-American. Some of these other guys that they brought in, just see, they play so well together offensively and defensively. Edie is Edie, but
better Purdue team. Better team.
Yeah. This Purdue, well, Connecticut?
No.
Oh, this Purdue team?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is their best team all around. This is their best team, but they've been so quickly out of the last two tournaments that I have my doubts. Houston's been to a couple of Final Fours recently.
Houston's got, in my opinion, I mean, I was impressed when Baylor went to the won their national championship. I was so impressed with their defense. Houston defense is reminding me of that Baylor defense.
Yeah, I mean, those three teams are playing really, really well. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the conference tournaments shake out. But I really think these three teams are locked as number one seeds.
Oh, yeah.
It could be Tennessee from the SEC. It could be Arizona from the Pac-12. It could be a North Carolina if they jump back up. But these three teams, to me, have really separated themselves. And I would be very, very surprised if it's not one of these three cutting down the nets. And for me, it's going to be Connecticut and Houston. They seem to be built for a run to a championship with their defensive prowess. They're much better defensive teams than Purdue is. Purdue has that mountain in the middle and great support around. But I think Houston and Klingman, who's a giant of himself with Connecticut, can give them the trouble, the most trouble. But it's exciting. I was singing to my wife today, "It's the most wonderful time." She's like, "No, it's not. It's not Christmas."
No, but right now with UConn at three, that puts them in their bracket prior to the final, championship game. I'm kind of hoping that they switch to number, they switch off where they don't really, because like you said, Purdue, great, better team. I don't think they're the type of team that can, make a deep run. Maybe to the Elite Eight, outside chance Final Four. I'll have to see what the seedings look like in regards to how that field of 64 is. But I really think for my money, I've never really, I can't remember the last time I had a one versus a one in the championship game, but this could be the year.
Yeah, it certainly seems like it could be the year. And again, I don't think it's necessarily one through four. I think it depends. They try to keep you close to your area, right? So Purdue would be Midwest, Connecticut would be East, Houston would be South. And then the West would be that fourth place team, whether it be Arizona or Tennessee would have to go out West. So by that definition, East and South would be in one side of the bracket. So if that's Connecticut and Houston, they would play in the Final Four. And then the Midwest and West will match up in the Final Four. So maybe they're going to have to move Houston or Connecticut out West. Like Connecticut was last year when they won the national championship. And then we can kind of go from there. But either way, it's exciting. The University of Hawaii men playing a little bit better, heading into the tournament. We're getting down the stretch. This is Ernie's year in basketball. The Tar Heels are playing well, and the Celtics are dominating like nobody's business. Woo! It sucks. This season sucks. All right, let's transition to a little bit of NFL. I think the Indianapolis, the combine ended today. I think it was a little disappointment in terms of big news. There's no major news that came out of there. You alluded to the fact off the air that Xavier Worthy ran that record 4.21 40 yard dash,
surpassing Ross, who did it what, 4 years ago or something like that.
Yeah, he did it a while ago. But then again, I mean, does that help? The question Ernie asked me was that does that really help Worthy? I mean, I think he was a fringe first round pick. I'm not sure running a 4.21 changes much, because we all know
he was fast.
He was fast, but he beat Ross, who was 4.22. Who sucked and is out of the NFL. Exactly. So it doesn't necessarily translate. He's still 165 pounds, so he's still a tiny wide receiver. But the biggest thing that I heard, and there's no real confirmation on it, but Lewis Riddick reported this, that executives at Indianapolis, at the Combine, said they believe J.J. McCarthy is going in the top five.
What?
They believe that J.J. McCarthy is going to be a top five draft pick, that there is a team or teams that have targeted to move up to get him in the top five. And then he went on and kind of stunk it a little bit in the throwing part, because he was one of the few quarterbacks to actually throw. Actually, that's not true. Nix threw and Penix threw. And apparently, according to ESPN, Penix was by far the most impressive throwing the ball at the combine. Of course, Caleb Williams didn't participate, but J.J. McCarthy, I mean, he was 202 pounds at Michigan. He's 219 now, so he's gotten a little bit bigger. But I do think there's a little bit of risk there, because they rarely threw the ball. So you're going to have to be just going on the fact that he was 26-1 as a quarterback. So he is a winner. But top five, whew.
Yeah, I think they're looking at, okay, Brady had a similar record, didn't really impress as far as combine is concerned, but he became the all-time, the GOAT of, you know, his position. Maybe they're looking at that same school, you know, kind of same transcript coming into the combine, but Brady was obviously really disrespected. McCarthy, I thought, would, you know, going into this thing, I thought McCarthy would be a late first round, maybe early second round around there. Top fives definitely seems like a reach.
Yeah, I mean, I think his floor at this point seems to be 12 to the Broncos. But there's also talk that the Broncos are enamored with Bo Nix, because there are a lot of similarities to Bo Nix and Drew Brees, who, of course, had tremendous success with Sean Payton. So we'll see. I mean, that's going to be interesting. But that's, again, I think that's one of those situations where that may be a little bit of a reach to draft J.J. McCarthy in the top five. I'm not sure who would trade up to do that. Again, a lot of the talk centers around the Falcons, the Steelers.
Yeah.
But that Steeler talk has kind of quieted it down this week.
It has. Even with Justin Fields, I heard recent news that Justin Fields is projected to go to the Falcons right now.
Well, but the Falcons stated yesterday that their number one priority, if available, is Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins is who they want.
At 40-something million.
Well, it depends. They have the cap space. If the price is right and they can get him for a short period of time, Kirk Cousins is their first choice. Justin Fields would be their backup choice with Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield has familiarity with Zach Robinson, who came from the Rams when he was there, and Raheem Morris. And the Falcons have expressed interest in Baker Mayfield as well. So if you're Desmond Ridder, you have no prayer. They're looking at every possible quarterback that's out there on the spectrum. But I think the whole Justin Fields thing has cooled off a little bit. I think the Bears are trying to heat it up a little bit so they can maximize the return.
Yeah.
But I think people see some of the deficiencies that he has. And again, he's going to have to be the perfect fit, right, in a particular organization. And like we talked about last week, I don't think going to a defensive coach in Raheem Morris is good for Justin Fields. But they have tremendous talent at the skill positions with the Falcons, with Pitts and Drake London and the two running backs. I mean, they have a tremendous amount of talent there. But again, he has to get with the right offensive coach. And we'll see.
Yeah, to me, a team who he'd fit in with would be the Philadelphia Eagles, but they don't need him.
Yeah, they don't need him at this point in time. So, yeah, I mean, because he's similar to Jalen Hurts in the way that they want to play. But again, yeah, it's kind of quieted down with the Steeler front.
I've heard...
That's on purpose drive down the price for a Justin Fields, or maybe they're waiting to see what happens with Russell Wilson.
I think, is the one.
And then you kind of go from there. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see. The other story that I think was you could start franchising people this week, and I think the big news is none of the main running backs were franchised. So Saquon Barkley is a free agent. Yeah. As is Derrick Henry. That was expected. As is Josh Jacobs, and Tony Pollard, you know, amongst others. I think Pollard is the weakest of the bunch. But if Dallas, for example, were to get a Saquon, a Josh Jacobs, lot of talk about Henry to the Ravens, you know, and I think he would fit perfectly with them. But I don't want Barkley to go to the Cowboys.
Yeah.
I mean, that would make them.
You got the Chargers running back, too.
Yeah, Austin Eckler. And the Chargers have expressed a tremendous amount of interest in Saquon Barkley. But in order to go get Saquon Barkley, they're going to have to make some changes and some cuts. So they have four guys that make $80 million. Bosa, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, and one more defensive player. But Khalil Mack.
Yeah, they're gonna keep Khalil, I heard.
Well, I heard that they're gonna trade him they're gonna keep Bosa.
I heard performance over age. Khalil Mack is older than Bosa, but I think his performance over the last couple of years.
Yeah, because Bosa can't stay healthy. Yeah. I think Bosa, because of his brother and his being younger, may have more leverage in securing a slightly better pick, because Khalil Mack is pretty old, so you're not going to give up a lot for him if you're another team. But that's another team. Saquon Barkley would fit perfect with what Jim Harbaugh wants to do. Austin Eckler does not. He's tiny. He's more of a scat back. That's not Jim Harbaugh. He wants to punish you and run it down your throat. But it's interesting that you have all of these running backs, none of them being franchised, all available. It's going to be very, very interesting to see where they land.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Barkley was franchised last year. I guess the decision was made, especially in today's NFL, where the running backs are really devalued. That trend continues. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Because in my opinion, you know, that can make and break a team, in my opinion. You know, you get, especially during the December months where, to me, you solidify your playoff chances in the month of December where it's cold and you're playing with the elements. That can make a difference.
Yeah, it absolutely can. I think Saquon Barkley still wants to be with the Giants, but I think the Giants last year kind of quietly promised that they would franchise him only once, giving him this opportunity. I'm just curious to see if there's another team out there that's going to pay him what he wanted last year, which is $14, $15 million a year. I don't think he's going to get that. So if the Giants can match what he could get somewhere else. I honestly think he'll stay with the Giants because I think he's loyal to them. I think he enjoys being there. He has a good relationship with Dable. So we'll see. It's going to be really, really curious. And again, that's Ernie Iamonte. I'm going to transition to my closing thought. You know, some of our closing thoughts can be really, really long. Mine's going to be very, very quick. I just want to talk a little bit about the early returns from my... You know what happens? With the Lakers, in my mind, officially not capable of winning a championship, I've moved on to the Dodgers already. I've moved on to the Dodgers. And Dodger training camp this year has been... Spring training has been an absolute circus. I mean, Shohei Ohtani... It's crazy. It's crazy, Ernie, how many people I personally know from Hawaii that's in Phoenix right now at Dodger camp just to try to watch Shohei Ohtani, including my wife's entire four sisters.
Really?
All in their 60s are all in Phoenix right now.
Really?
To watch Shohei Ohtani. So it's...
All staying at your daughter's house?
No. They're probably stayed as close to Camelback Field as possible. So, but so far, Shohei, obviously he's not going to pitch this year. So far in spring training, they want to get him 50 at-bats. So far, so good. He's hitting 714 after his first... three games, I believe. I think he's 7-for-9 so far with a whole bunch of walks. So far, so good from Shohei. He had a home run in his very first game. Since then, he's gone 6-for-7 or 6-for... Yeah, 6-for-6, I think he's gone since that game where he went 1-for-3. So Shohei is certainly... getting the job done on the field. Yamamoto in his first start, dominant. 2 innings, 1 hit, 5 strikeouts in his first time. Tyler Glasnow, dominant last night. 3 innings pitched, no hits, no walks, 5 strikeouts. So far, so good for the Dodgers free agent additions. But from a money standpoint,
I knew you were going to get to this.
I think when we're talking about a return on investment,
I knew you were going
to. It has to be the financial impact that Shohei Ohtani is already having, not only for the Dodgers, but for the Major League Baseball in general. Not to put down the Angels. I like the Angels. They're close to Disneyland. But Shohei in Dodger blue is worldwide news.
Yeah.
And it is...
all of Asia.
It's all of Asia.
Not just Japan.
And Yamamoto being there only makes it even more intense. And I think it's an incredible opportunity for the Dodger brand to grow globally. Especially with him only taking $2 million a year and deferring $68 million. But even with that, I think it's clear. It looks like the Dodgers are going to sell average over 50,000 fans per game this year. That's over 4 million fans for a year. It used to be where if you could get to 3 million, you're outrageous. And most parks now, and you know, all these new parks, they don't seat 50,000. Yeah. They seat upper 30s or 40. The Dodgers are going to be north at 50, and every single stadium that they travel to is going to be packed, you know. So, and what's really cool is how he handles this. Still with humongous humility and humbleness, yeah. The nature of a Japanese national. That's just kind of their way. So humble. I think he was getting tired of all the groupies hanging out, trying to hook up with him, that he announced the other day that he is married, even if we don't know who his wife is. He is married. So he says. But early returns are tremendous. I mean, you're looking at Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman as the top three. Whew, that's going to be powerful for the Dodgers if everybody can stay healthy. But financially, the Dodgers got to be, as crazy as it sounds, when you offer somebody a $700 million contract, I think the Dodgers are going to turn a serious profit on that contract, even if they were paying $70 million per year to Shohei.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're going to have to invest that wisely. I mean, a lot of it is going to be after he retires. I mean, for years after he retired.
Do you know, Ernie, that because he's deferred this contract, right? There are legislators in the state of California that are trying to change the law the legislation law to prevent athletes or anyone from doing something like this? Because all it could be is like a Hollywood actor who say, hey, I want $50 million for this film, but let's defer it for 10 years and then pay me when I'm out of Hollywood and I'm living somewhere else around the world. So these politicians, they ain't going to lose out on the cash, man. They want that cash. Yeah. But so far, so good. Shohei Ohtani, Dodger camp has been just incredibly abuzz. And they've only lost once so far in spring training. So on to the Dodgers, Ernie. On to the Dodgers for me.
Yeah, for you. Yeah. I have a feed. You know,
Ernie's not going to move to the Cardinals until July after the NBA draft. Yeah, he'll start paying attention.
Hopefully.
And it's only if they're in contention still at that time.
They're going to have to make some off-season moves.
And then the only other thing that I wanted to say, and then we'll wrap this up. Congratulations to Caitlin Clark. You heard me talk about her 2 weeks ago. Today, she surpassed Pistol Pete Maravich and is now the all-time leading scorer in men's and women's basketball history.
And she made the announcement the other day that she's turning pro.
She will be drafted by the Indiana Fever, and already on Thursday she announced she was turning pro. Their season ticket office was a buzz. Prices went jacked up, and Indiana's sitting pretty because last year they had the number one pick, got Aliana Boston from South Carolina. They were bad still this year. Now they're going to get Caitlin Clark. They're going to have the two straight number one overall picks on that team. It looks pretty bright. And for Caitlin Clark, it's the perfect scenario because Indiana is as close to Iowa as humanly possible. So her family is going to be able to watch her play a lot more. And we'll see if she carries on this mega star. Today's game against Ohio State, her senior day in Iowa. Average ticket price at the game, $574. The highest ticket price for a female basketball game in history.
Yeah,
no matter what it was. WNBA, Olympics, college, the number one high price ticket ever. Caitlin Clark is incredible. Congratulations on passing Pistol Pete Maravich.
Way to go.
Maybe we'll draft her instead of Bronny for the Lakers. Anything else, Ernie?
I'm good.
Again, before we sign off, we want to always thank the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, especially Ku'ule and Paul Breck, who lock it down and do so much. Chaminade, HPU, OIA Sports, they do an incredible job. They're at every UH event. I don't know how they have this energy, but they're still really, really young. Not like Ernie and I. Especially Ernie. But we want to thank them and check them out every day, 7:60 a.m., 95.1 FM on Wake Up in the Den, HighSportsRadio.com. That's HawaiiSportsRadio.com. You can listen to their podcast every day and our podcast. And check us out on social media at Sports Rivals Podcast on IG and Facebook, Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter. And until next week, where the Celtics will hopefully lose a game, the Sports Rivals are out.
Thank you for joining us on the Sports Rivals Podcast. Check us out on social media at Sports Rivals Podcasts on Instagram and at Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter, where you can share topics you'd like to hear.